Like a hair's breadth difference, and heaven and earth are set apart. Like a hair's breadth difference, and heaven and earth are set apart. This is a line from the Faith Mind Sutra that many of us have heard over and over. Poetic description of delusion, our tendency to separate from reality, to be mistaken about the truth of things. Now, when I was growing up, Irish Catholic, heaven and earth were apart. Basically, you lived life, which was a veil of tears. And if you did a good job, if you lived it well, heaven would be your reward. But in Zen, there's only now. It's just this. And if we are holding out for heaven, we miss it. It's a little bit like I was still in my conditioned Catholic mode. We had a Zazen guy last week, and you know, we get served a lunch in Orioki bowls. And so the main serving was rice and beans. And along came also cornbread and sour cream, which for some reason I thought, oh, there's rice and beans and then there's dessert. So I set the dessert aside, finished my rice and beans, and was looking forward to having the corn muffin and whipped cream when suddenly the server appears to take back the tray. And then it's like, oh, that was not dessert, that was condiments to be eaten with the rice and beans, and of course I missed it. So when we think that there's a certain moment to get to, be it dessert, or enlightenment, or the end of the elections, we actually miss where our life is. And speaking of the elections, like everyone else, I've been totally caught up, preoccupied, spending countless hours looking anxiously at the poll numbers, reading the pundits, trying to predict the outcome. I mean, things look a little better now, but there's also the thing of trying to understand, trying to figure out how we could get here. How is it that this country has gotten so close to electing a madman? And so what it comes down to, of course, is ignorance, isn't it? Ignorance on many levels. There's the conventional definition of ignorance, which is lack of information, not having the facts, being uninformed. And you know, we see this even in a candidate who doesn't even feel the need to prepare for a debate. Facts are irrelevant. But the ignorance we're concerned with here today is more the one Buddhism defines as the lack of knowledge about our true nature. our delusion about what's real. And so we might say that Trump has been offering us a masterclass in delusion. He embodies, he's the embodiment of delusion itself. In Gendo Koan, Dogen says, to carry the self forward and experience myriad things is delusion. To carry the self forward and experience myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and experience the self is awakening. So we see the deluded self, you see, carrying itself forward. It is separate from the ground of being. It doesn't realize its interconnectedness to all beings in each moment. And therefore, cut off from the roots of being, it has to win. Racked by an anxiety or an insecurity, it has to prove itself and assert its dominance at all costs, you know, be it belittling, demeaning others in order to feel more intact. It's brittle, easily offended, and stays up at night worrying about how it's doing. So in its grand isolation in this guilt palace, it's really a hardened shell, lacking in empathy for others and estranged from its true self. So I say an object lesson in deludedness because, you know, if we're honest, we can recognize that we might be subject to some of the same behaviors, you know, albeit on a lesser scale. We certainly don't exercise his level of privilege that allows us to act out our impulses, our whims, you know, to demand what we want. But, you know, in some way we would not be mesmerized or magnetized to his grotesque performance if in some ways if we didn't see something that that mirrors something in ourselves that, of course, we can be horrified by in him. There's no ego, you see, alive that doesn't consider itself to be the star of the show, the center of the universe, and as such doesn't worry about how I'm doing and whether things are going my way or not. Because that's the definition, isn't it, of ego, is that it feels, oh, it's all about me. And so we sit, don't we, the whole enterprise of Zazen is to understand what a house of cards this ego is. That actuality, we can't grasp. Who we are, moment to moment. You can't hold the self, concretize it, and say, this is me for all time. It just is moment by moment by moment, things coming up, arising, passing away. And it's only through Zazen, through meditation, that we can glimpse the insubstantiality of this self that we take so seriously. And in the insubstantiality, we then recognize how it arises out of the formless benefaction of being, moment by moment, simultaneously with all other beings. And only then, in that knowing the unfathomable nature, actually, of who we are, do we feel a sense of trust, peace. So Dongshan, who is a very esteemed teacher, way back in the 8th century, he was taking leave of his master, Yunyan, and he said, so what should I tell them when they ask me about your teaching? And after some pause, Yunyan said, just this is it. And then he added, now you are in charge of this great matter. You must be thoroughgoing. So Dongshan went off kind of scratching his head. So what does he mean? Just this is it. What does he mean? Like, what's he talking about? And he happened to be crossing a river, a stream, and saw his reflection in the fast flowing water. And was awakened. And then wrote this verse. Just don't seek from others, or you'll be far estranged from self. I now go on alone, everywhere I meet it. It now is me. I now am not it. One must understand in this way to merge with suchness. Just don't seek from others, or you'll be far estranged from self. A sage in our own time, Bob Dylan, put it this way: you lose yourself, you reappear. You suddenly find you got nothing to fear. Alone you stand, without nobody near, when a trembling distant voice, unclear, startles your sleeping ears to hear that somebody thinks they really found you. A question in your nerves is lit, yet you know there is no answer fit to satisfy, ensures you not to quit, to keep it in your mind and not forget that it is not he or she or them, or it, that you belong to. I've got nothing, Ma, to live up to. So when we've got nothing to live up to, no image to project on the world, to maintain, and we can perhaps be able to be right in our own experience, abide in our own experience, meet it, be intimate with it. We don't have to disown it because it doesn't correspond to this idea of myself I think I have to have or need to be. So we can be simply present to what arises. Confusion, irritation, fear. And our very presence, being aware, being with it, allowing it, is what liberates it. As Rumi puts it in the poem Guest House, the dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door, laughing, and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So in our practice, we say, drop the thought, go back to the breath. And we do that in the service of cultivating a capacity to attend, to notice. It's a muscle. So they're the training wheels so that we can sit and be with what's here. I say that because people may confuse that with, okay, they say drop the thought, which is reject. Reject my experience, reject me. But it's not that. When we can't be with our own experience, then that's what drives us to look outside of ourselves, no? For how to be. We look for approval. That's how we survived as children. We still do it. Boss, teachers, partners, we look for recognition, for affirmation. Am I doing okay? Or we project onto others what we can't accept in ourselves. She's a liar. She should be locked up. Her heart is full of hate. So when we abandon our own organic connection to the whole, we are left feeling shallow and empty, wrecked with this emptiness that has me up at 3 o'clock tweeting out of loneliness and despair, lashing out at the unfairness. Whole game is rigged. I should be the one on top. See, I need my drug. I need the attention of others. I need to know that I matter. The egoic self can never feel sufficient. It has an acute sense of its own inadequacy. Because it's true. It's not up to the job. How could it be? It's disconnected from the vastness of being. It's disconnected from its own source. Heaven and earth are separated. So, to go on alone is to recognize, you know, the provisional nature of this self that got born at a certain time in history, in a certain body of particular gender, given race, social class, culture, and that we carry the program code inside of us with all the survival schemas intact. This is what you do as a man. This is how you behave as a woman. Along with all the familial scripts that say how our needs should be met. And in Zazen, you see, in this idea of dropping, we are working with the programming so that we can break through and see that we are more than just the son and daughter of our parents. We are more than just the program that drives us, that persuades us that this is what I need to do to be a success. This is how, these are the hoops I need to jump through. And in breaking through our conditioning, we break out of this imprisonment, you see, of this identity that we are locked into, which is so small, so pathetic, really, against the unfathomable vastness, the unknowable vastness of who we actually are. So Dogen said, when the myriad things, how did he put it? When the myriad things come forth and experience the self, this is awakening. So to be with, you see what's arising. Just this is it. And just as we do that as individuals on the cushion, so as a society, you see, our conditioning is, oh my God, right there in front of us, the misogyny, the bigotry, the gaping wound of inequality. And we see it, we cannot turn our eyes away, the veils have dropped. We cannot kid ourselves that we have worked through these issues. I now am it, we are it, this is who we are, this is our society, we are it, but it is not us. We're bigger. We're a work in progress. And only by opening to the stench can we liberate it. I'll end with Thich Nhat Hanh's wonderful poem, Call Me By My True Names. Call me by my true names. Just speaking to just this. I am the frog swimming happily in the clear pond, and I am also the grass snake who, approaching in silence, feeds itself on the frog. I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones, my legs as thin as bamboo sticks. And I am the arms merchant selling deadly weapons to Uganda. I am the 12-year-old girl, refugee on a small boat, who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. And I am the pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I am a member of the Politburo with plenty of power in my hands, and I am the man who has to pay his debt of blood to my people, dying slowly in a forced labor camp. My joy is like spring, so warm it makes flowers bloom in all walks of life. My pain is like a river of tears, so full it fills the four oceans. Please call me by my true names so I can hear all my cries and laughs at once, so I can see that my joy and pain are one. Please call me by my true names so I can wake up, and so the door of my heart can be left open, the door of compassion. Thank you.